This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Terps finished off the regular season beating the Northwestern Wildcats 74-61 on Senior Day there. They two seed in the Big Ten tournament, and they are ranked 11th in the latest AP poll. And let's go out to Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Mike DeCourcy, part of Big Ten Network's college basketball coverage, joins us now. And Mike, thanks as always for joining us. We appreciate your time. So they were a preseason pick to go to finish 10th in the Big Ten. They finished second. How surprised are you that we see that they sit here in the two seed as the tournament starts next week?
It's been a remarkable performance by the Terps. I don't think any of us knew what a revelation Jacoby Gillespie would be, and I think that's where it starts. I mean, we all knew that Julian was a terrific college player. We've seen it for multiple seasons. And Derek Queen was an elite prospect. I think he's probably performed better than maybe even his star rating, just because we've seen a lot of five stars come into college basketball and flash talent but not be players. And Derek's a player. I mean, he brings it every night. He brings up those double-doubles. He's a force with his ability to rim roll. There's a lot to like about him. And so the other two wings have been terrific. And it's been a really, really nice basketball team. And they have been able to get through. Now, this week will be a little different because you're playing game after game after game. So depth can get you in that circumstance, whether it gets you Saturday or Sunday if you stay alive. It can get you. But when they get into next week's tournament, the depth thing becomes less of a concern. There's always the concern for foul trouble and that sort of thing or injury. But to be honest with you, foul trouble to the wrong player can change the deepest team in college basketball. At Michigan State, if Jace Richardson gets into foul trouble, are they still good? Yeah, but they're not the same team. And so if this team has a little foul trouble, it maybe hurts a little bit more than some. But this team will be bothered less by depth in the NCAA tournament than they have been at any point this year. And it hasn't really bothered them that much.
Mike, how much credit do you give Kevin Willard for all of this? It just seemed like he hit home run after home run in the portal, overcame the slow start, 1-3 in conference play, overcame the road struggles, starting 0-4 in road games, to finishing second in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I give him a ton of credit, and he's a coach that deserves more credit than he's gotten over the years, because I don't think that people understood how difficult the Seton Hall job is. Because he did it so well. While he was getting Seton Hall to multiple NCAA tournaments over the decade or so he was there, DePaul was, which had similar issues, was struggling to win five games. And so it just shows, and I'm not saying Seton Hall has never won before, but DePaul had won before as well. But both of them are disadvantaged from a facility standpoint, from a interest standpoint to teams like UConn or St. John's or Villanova, certainly. They all are less difficult jobs than Seton Hall would be. And now he comes to Maryland, and he's only been there a short time, and I think he's got the Terps in a really good position, and they need to continue to recruit at a high level, and they need to continue to develop at a high level. But I think that he's done a wonderful job with this season's team.
How much do you think they need a win against the Fighting Illini? Well, I'm gonna whoever they play, I think it's going to be Illinois, but whatever. Do they need a win in this conference tourney to solidify a top four seed? And is there any way for you to just have a gut feeling on, is this the kind of team that, I know getting sent out west doesn't mean as much as it used to with pods and everything, but do you have a sense of sort of where the committee might sort of slot them?
Well, if they get a number four seed and they're and or if they get a five, because the fives are going the same place as the four, the odds are with them heading to Seattle as of now, because that's not that Seattle's not one of the great cities in America, but relative to geography, that's the least desirable placement for every 4-5 type team except for Arizona. Everybody else, it's like. They'd much rather be in Cleveland, or they'd much rather be in Providence or whatever. I think there might be a four seed that goes to Providence. We'll have to see. But if it's not that, it'll be Denver or Seattle. So that's kind of what it's trending toward. And then maybe you get fortunate and you get placed back east for the Sweet 16 in the Elite Eight. And that would be really a great situation for the Terps, because Newark is not far at all.
No.
And Kevin certainly knows the real estate up there.
We're talking with Mike DeCourcy. He's Inside Access here on the Fan. Well, let's talk about best case scenario for him, Mike. If they make a run in the Big Ten tournament, say they get to Sunday, do they have a chance to improve their seed? Do they have any chance at a three seed?
It's not out of the question, but it would take a lot of good fortune on the part of the Terps, and a bad fortune for teams like A&M, for Kentucky, teams like that. I think that I never rule things out, because you just don't know how that's going to affect the various metrics and all of that sort of thing. But I think the most likely scenario is that they get better placement as a four, be the first team on the four line. If everything works out and there's not a Big Ten team in the East Well, actually, if you were the four, you would be the Big Ten team in the East. So, no, that's not even a concern. So that would be the ideal, would be if you could get to the one or two spot on the four line, then you're going to probably get shipped anyway, because that's where most of the fours are going to be headed. But then you would have that first option on the regional, and you would be then in position to be placed in Newark, probably with Duke. And that would, Duke's really good, but wouldn't that be fun if you got a chance to have Terps versus Blue Devils in the Sweet 16?
Yeah. Mike, it seems like the Big Ten has at least eight teams that are locked. Indiana, Ohio State seemingly on the bubble. What do they need to do to get in?
Yeah, I think first of all, they need the good fortune of few bid steals. Now, last year, a bid steal is a team that wins an automatic bid that would not be in the tournament any other way. They are not at-large candidates. And a year ago, we had five of those. It's considered to be an all-time record. I don't know if you could theoretically say it's pretty much theoretical. You can't say that officially. But from a theoretical standpoint, it was an all-time record. This year, we already had one team that was a potential bid steal, Drake. They got their automatic bid in the Valley yesterday by taking care of Bradley. There's probably only two more realistic possibilities out there, and that would be for someone other than St. Mary's or Gonzaga, like a San Francisco, to win the West Coast Conference. That'll be decided tonight. If Gonzaga is playing St. Mary's tomorrow night, no bid steal. They're both getting in. And then the Memphis situation in the American Conference, they'll certainly be in. And then will they win the auto and take the automatic bid and therefore no bid steal? So that's important relative to Big Ten teams, Ohio State and Indiana, also relative to Oklahoma and a few others, Xavier trying to scrape in, Carolina. Those teams are all sort of hoping that we have none of those circumstances. And then you have the very, very outside chance of what we saw a year ago with NC State winning the ACC and therefore taking another bid off the field.
What is, like, best case scenario for the SEC? Like, if they just go hog wild, what are we looking at numbers-wise?
Well, they're going to get 13,
wow.
I think. Because Oklahoma No, they could. Oklahoma could screw it up, I guess. It's possible. But again, there's almost nobody to take it away from them behind them.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons I wrote last week, and you can still see this column pinned to my Twitter feed, at TSN Mike, about why expansion's such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because if we did it beyond 68, I mean, really, if we're putting Xavier into our fields, and I've got them there, and so do most bracket analysts, if you're putting Xavier in with one quad, one win, what's behind that?
Right.
And so that's why Oklahoma and Ohio State and Indiana are in reasonably good shape, because what's behind them is really not great. And so I think that's why they'll get 13. I don't think they – at one point there was a possibility that they could get 14, but Texas has sort of put themselves behind that. I think it's going to be they would probably have to win the league tournament, and they're just not good enough to do that in that league.
Mike, before we let you go real quick, let's assume everything goes according to seed. What's an Illinois-Maryland game look like Friday to you?
Yeah, it's an interesting game because Illinois has two players who are going to be pros, who are going to be first-round picks, Will Riley and Yakachonis, Kasparis Yakachonis. Those guys are first-round picks in whatever draft they decide to enter, probably this one. And so you have to deal with their ability to create plays. And what you have to do is make the defense rigid enough that the decisions that they make when they're trying to create those plays are uncomfortable and make them make the wrong decisions. Because you can do that. Even Rutgers did it to them in the Rutgers home game back in early February. Other teams that are better made it happen, like Tennessee made them make bad decisions down the stretch. It's going to be a challenging game because they are really talented. And so you have to make the game hard, and that's what Maryland has to do. And you look at Julian Reed is such a wonderful defender, and you've got such great ability at the rim with him and Derek that if you can just keep the ball out of the lane at a reasonable rate, then by the time they do get in there, they've got to deal with two legit shot blockers. I think it would be a good day for Maryland. But it would certainly be a challenge. They'll have to play well. They'll have to play right.
Mike DeCourcy, always great. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we go from Big Ten time to T-Bone time. TMI with TIM. What you got?
Yeah, more Terps time. And we were all at Kevin Willard's introductory press conference a couple of years ago. And I was thinking about this clip, this quote that he said during that time, but it's been illustrated over these past couple of home games. We're going to play that cut next on The Fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM. The floor is yours.
It's crazy what a few years difference makes in regards to the Terps, because you flash back to Mark Turgeon's last year here. Things had gotten really stale with him, and that's not to say that there weren't any good teams under Mark Turgeon, but it was typical where they get off to a hot start, they'd fade like crazy down the stretch. And a lot of people want to bring up the 2019-2020 team, which was very talented. I'm not saying it wasn't talented. They lost three of their last five games to not be able to win the outright Big Ten regular season title. Mm-hmm. They beat Michigan to get a share of it. That was still a very talented team, but I think there's some revisionist history with that team. And they always bombed in the Big Ten tournament. Turgeon did have the one Sweet 16 appearance, and that was the underachieve year with Diamond Stone. And
yeah, they got lucky.
Yeah,
that team got upset.
Yeah. Or whatever to get there.
Lost to Kansas in Sweet 16.
Yes. But I remember being at the Xfinity Center with you, Ken, as well, for Kevin Willard's introductory press conference. And there was one quote that really stuck out to me, talking about getting the swagger back.
What our teams are going to do and what we are going to do is we are going to bring that swagger that Coach Williams had, and that Joe Smith, Stevie Francis, Steve Blake, Juwan Dixon. We are going to bring back that passion, that energy that Coach Williams coached with, that his players played with, and that the swagger was something that a kid that grew up in Huntington, Long Island, turning on ESPN and watching a Maryland game, all of a sudden wants to go play at the University of Maryland, play for a guy because that's how his team's played.
Besides the
Juwan Dixon.
Juwan Dixon. Let's
that's
look
a little, that's a cramp. Bygones are bygones. Yeah,
let's
look he past knows it's Juwan Dixon now. Yeah, he knows.
Let's look past that part. Yeah. But
stuff happens in introductory press conferences.
Bringing the swagger back was imperative. You got the you were at that game, Ken. The fire turgeon chants during the Virginia Tech game. And then he ends up
there
quitting.
There was sunshine.
He ends up quitting on that team. And this is just one really good year, and Willard overachieved in his first year. Last year was a disaster, and this year it's been really, really good. They were predicted to finish 10th in the Big Ten prior to the season. They finished second, and you have the back-to-back sellouts to end the regular season with the students seeing all those videos and pictures from Saturday for Senior Day. And then, of course, we were at the Michigan State game where there is some of this swagger back for this program, and you know the college athletics, it's a year-to-year proposition at this point, and they're going to undergo a ton of change, but this is how Maryland basketball should be year in and year out, where towards the end of Mark Turgeon's tenure here, you're hoping to get into the tournament. You're talking about bubble, and it should be, you should be ranked every single year with Maryland basketball. You should be wondering how high of a seed you're going to get come March Madness. And you hope that this can really just be a springboard for what should be a successful run for Kevin Willard. Now, the season, hopefully, is far from finished. You hope that they can make some noise in the Big Ten tournament, get at least that 4 seed, and get at least to the second weekend in March Madness.
Second weekend of March Madness is to me, and upsets happen, I get it, but that's the bare minimum for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll say this about Willard, and I know we're only 3 years in. I think he gets this place more than Terz ever did.
Yes.
I think he fits in better. Just the whole East Coast thing. I think he gets East Coast mentality.
Yes.
I think he gets expectations. I think he gets hobnobbing with boosters. I think he gets recruiting. I think he gets a sort of style of play and the swagger part of it.
And he adjusts what's on going the fly,
to,
too.
What's going to appeal to these kids. I think he gets the fact that you have to empower these young people. It can't be my way or the highway. It can't be my defensive principles and what worked for me 15 years ago. Overall, I just think I just think he gets it. I never felt like Terz quite got what he was stepping into.
No, I did. Yeah, and he seemed to want to run from
it. And that's the 180 in terms of the
in-game. And that's going around these days.
In-game adjustments, by the way, because that was Turgeon's.
Be careful whose shoes you fill.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, coming up next, NBA heading down the stretch. We'll talk to our NBA insider, buddy Mo Hamilton. What's going on? Can you trust the Cavs in the East? We'll ask him next here on The Fan. Some breaking Ravens news we'll get to you real quick. Brandon Stevens has signed a 3-year, $36 million deal with the New York Jets. When we get more information, we will get it to you, but Brandon Stevens leaves. But let's talk some NBA basketball as we're heading down the stretch in the association. We head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline where we talk to our insider, Mo Hamilton. And Mo, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. Let's start in the East. And the Cleveland Cavaliers are up 8 in the East, and there's less than 20 games to go.
So they're
going to win the East. But do you trust them to beat Boston in the playoffs?
Man, that's like the million-dollar question right now. You know, I think I would probably say no, and I would lean toward the champs only because I think over the course of the entire season, even in games, right, like the Celtics have kind of showed us they have this ability to kind of tune in and tune out. You know what I mean? Like focus for a full 48 minutes seems to be an issue for these guys. They are somewhat reminiscent of Chauncey Billups' Detroit Pistons.
I like him.
Where they kind of – seemed to get bored with knowing that they were just like the superior team. You know what I mean? And it sounds kind of crazy, but the other thing, too, that kind of makes me favor Boston is that they really haven't been 100% healthy for, like, the entire season, you know? Like, they've been missing Drew Holiday at times. You know, they've had injuries up and down that roster. Kristaps Porzingis himself hasn't really been 100% this season. So I think if you're the Cavaliers, that kind of gives you hope. Because if you're waiting all season to get healthy, maybe it just means you're not capable of being 100% healthy. Aside from that, the Cavs in all likelihood would have home court advantage in that series, and sometimes that can make the difference. But boy, oh boy, I don't think anybody saw Cleveland being this good of a team. They're seasoned, they're deep, they pretty much have everything that they need. So if these two teams do wind up in the Eastern Conference Finals, I definitely expect a tremendous series to come out of it.
I kind of thought the Knicks were a little fugazi before the Brunson injury, and now, I mean, I don't really buy the defense. Nobody buys the depth, and when they face top five, top eight teams this year, they have failed to hold their own. Do you think they even go as far as they did last year in the playoffs?
And what the hell's happened to Mikal Bridges?
I thought you were going to say the Sixers. I should have known better.
They're not even worth wasting time.
Yeah, he broke my heart.
Yeah, no. So the Bridges thing, I think it's just, it's really confounding. You know, I think that you can look at a bunch of different teams and a bunch of different players, and there are guys that are sort of just like unselfish to a fault, where they seem to be more concerned with blending into their team than fitting out, in the words of LeBron, toward Luka Doncic. So I think that has some to do with it with Bridges. But all that aside, you know, team guy or not, there have just been far too many times this season. Like, the shot has been so inconsistent; it comes and goes. And then to me, it's not necessarily about the numbers. It's more so about engagement. You know what I mean? And if your role on the team is to be a defensive stopper and to be like a 3-and-D guy, then okay, fine. You know, if you're only going to take 8 or 9 shots over the course of the game, well, then we want to at least see you hit, you know, 4 or 5 of them. You know what I mean? But Bridges has just been very inconsistent all season long. Not really sure what to attribute it to. Maybe you could say it's growing pains. Maybe you could say it's chemistry. And then as far as the Knicks themselves are concerned, you know, the funny thing about it is I don't really think anybody in the Knicks organization came into this season believing that they were a contender for the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. I think for the Knicks organization themselves, they always looked at this season as a bit of a bridge, because they knew, no pun intended there, they knew that when they executed that trade for Karl Anthony Towns, that it would put them in a very precarious position as far as the salary cap and as far as being hard capped is concerned. So the Knicks made two big trades where they essentially traded two rotation pieces for one. They did that to make the ceiling for the core and for the team higher. I think that they kind of knew that they would need at least one or two buyout season cycles and summer cycles to try to get some depth on that team. So PJ Tucker will certainly help. I think they still need another big guy, and they could probably still use another very reliable combo guard off the bench. So they need a couple more pieces. I think they know that. And I think at this point, you know, you give them a puncher's chance in the conference, but I think along with the Knicks, the Cavaliers and the Celtics, I think everybody kind of rates them 1 and 2. And I think the dark horse in Milwaukee Bucks warrant a mention as well. But right now it's definitely looking like the Cavs and the Celtics and everybody else in the East.
Let's go to the West, Moak. Talk first about the surging Warriors. They're 11-2 since bringing in Jimmy Butler. What have you thought of his fit with Golden State?
Yeah, I think it's good. You know, I think it works. Draymond Green says they're going to win the championship. You know, I guess we'll have to wait and see if that
actually is true. He says a lot of things.
He does. But I mean, what do I think about the Warriors? You know, I think that the acquisition for Jimmy Butler was an interesting decision, but it was one that was very, very easy to rationalize, because at the end of the day, you know, Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry kind of need each other. They both need each other, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You know, Butler is trying to prove, and I mean, in short order, one could say that he has already proven, but you know, the Warriors, like, they know that the window is closing on their dynasty. If you still want to even call it a dynasty, but Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Steve Kerr, you know, those three guys together, they know that the end is in sight. And I think the acquisition for Jimmy Butler and the relatively short contract extension, right? Like, this is a guy that was really looking to get paid from Miami, and that's why he ended up kind of kicking and screaming and forcing his way out. You know, he wants to get paid, which he did, and he wants to show that he wants to compete for a championship, right? And they seem to be in that scenario, 11-2 in the game since he's arrived there, and currently sitting in sixth in the Western Conference, and now with LeBron James going to be on the shelf for at least a few weeks, with Aaron Gordon not being able to get right with that calf, he's in and out of the lineup, you know, the Rockets kind of stumbling a bit here down the stretch, you know, it wouldn't really surprise anybody to see the Warriors make a move and maybe end up with that fourth seed and one of the home court advantage spots in the first round of the postseason. So definitely a team to watch as long as they can stay healthy. I think that they would definitely be a concern for the Oklahoma City Thunder in round two if the Warriors are able to move up and if the seeds otherwise hold.
We're talking with Moak Hamilton's Inside Access here on the Fan. Moak, let's check back in with the Dallas Mavericks, shall we? As it's gotten worse. Kyrie out for the year now. Do you play AD anymore? This Luka playing so well in LA really makes Dallas look. I'm trying to make sense out of this whole thing, and as time passes, it just smells.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all in that same boat. You know, I think that when the trade happened, it was really funny. So I was up late. It might have been on my birthday, actually, but I was up pretty late. It was a Saturday night. And when I saw the tweet come across from Shams Charania, I was like, oh, man, somebody hacked his account, you know? And I was just waiting for the tweet to be deleted. And then he tweeted again and said, this is real. You know, this is 100% real. Like, this is not a drill. And that's when things kind of got serious, you know. But I think most of us are still trying to make sense out of the trade. Dallas, I will say that if they're able to be 100% healthy, and that's obviously not going to be until next season where everybody's a year older, but if they're able to pull it all together, I mean, with the pieces that they have on that team, they do have a nice core. But, I mean, gee, I think that core would probably look a little better if Luka Doncic was still the one there leading it, and they would still be a true contender. But it was a bizarre move at the time, because I just don't think that we've ever seen an in-prime, sub-30 superstar traded the very next season after leading his team to an NBA Finals appearance. That I don't think we've ever seen before. And frankly, Anthony Davis getting hurt in his very first game in Dallas, you know, it's sort of like the chef's kiss of like, you know, knew this was not a great trade when they made it. So
basketball gods did not like that trade.
Yeah, it certainly seems so.
They got three great quarters out of him, Moak. So there's that. Moak, thanks as always, buddy. We appreciate your time.
All right, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Moak Hamilton. Coming up next here on the program, Ravens get Ronnie Stanley done over the weekend. How great a signing was that for them? We'll tell you. Plus, they've lost a couple free agents in this afternoon. We'll tell you who next here on The Fan.
Well, Ronnie and I did a deal the last time, so that's great. He and I have a good friendship. We've known each other for a long time. He's got a great agent in Kim Miale. Never want to say 100%, but I feel good that we'll have a good, healthy debate, a good process. We're going to meet with Kim in Indy this week, and I'm optimistic that we'll be able to get a deal done.
So it was Eric DeCosta at the Combine. He did meet with Ronnie Stanley's agent, Kim Miale, and they eventually got a deal done. 3 years, $60 million, $44.5 million guaranteed. And so Ronnie Stanley signs, and in light of some of the signings we've seen today on the first day of legal tampering, the Ravens got themselves quite a bargain, relatively speaking.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that midway through next year, we might be talking about Ronnie Stanley's ankles again and this or that. That's at this stage of his career, you know that's what you're up against. But to basically get him for 3 years, $52 million, and that's how I'm going to look at this. Because what was it, $8.5 million last year?
Yeah.
And then this is really 44 for two. So to be able to basically go into that meeting with him last year, have him leave that money on the table, you got rid of the future years, which was better for your cap and better for his flexibility. He comes back to you anyway, and you get him for less than lesser players are making. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's a steal because, again, The injury risk is significant. But they would be privy to exactly what works and what doesn't work to get him through an offseason and get him through a season better than any other team. And I have to commend them because they obviously left what could have been very contentious negotiations with him last year on good enough terms that he was willing, after vastly outperforming his contract, to run it back here. That doesn't happen all the time. That doesn't happen most of the time. That rarely happens. So there obviously was a degree of bedside manner and people skills and the human communications of this that worked in DaCosta's favor. I wish there was more of that going on the other side over at the warehouse.
There's risk to it, but ultimately it's a two-year deal in terms of the guaranteed money. So this isn't a long-term deal. If it ends up blowing up in your face, okay, it is what it is. But it's worth taking because it really frees you up for how you want to operate the rest of this offseason, where if Ronnie Stanley would have left, they would have had a glaring need at tackle. They would have moved Roger Rosengarten from the right side to the left side, and if you would have went into the draft with that big of a hole, it kind of forces you in that one direction, where now it frees you up for more of a best player available, which is more of what they want to do. We put out a poll, IA1057 The Fan is how you can vote on it on Twitter. Over 300 votes in, Ravens got ahead with the league year open and secured Ronnie Stanley to what amounts to a two-year, $44 million deal. You can keep Rosengarten at right tackle and keeps Lamar with the only left tackle he's known on a short-term commitment. What do you think of the deal, Ravens flock? 62.8% love it, 27.1% like it, 10.1% hate it.
I went like, but that was before I saw what Dan Moore Jr. and Jalen Moore got on the open market today. Like, I'll take Ronnie Stanley with his quote-unquote questions of his knee, ankle, whatever, over giving Dan Moore Jr. $50 million guaranteed.
No, look, I loved it. Again, I can't tell you that it's going to work out as we all would hope. But you look at these things based on the market, what's happening in real time, the other available options, the potential downside, and it's only money. And in NFL standards, it's not crazy money. It's nothing close to crazy money. If you would have told me 24 hours after the Bills loss that this is how this was going to end, I would have said, I don't think they're going to get him quite that cheap.
Yeah.
Like, I would have said,
I think we were thinking, even after the end of season press conference with how Eric DaCosta was talking, we didn't think he was going to be back.
Well, obviously, as they got into this process, yes, they felt better, yes, about the price point and how willing he might be to do something before the league year officially opens.
Jason, there's something to be said for his comfort with the Ravens because there was more money out there for him if he wanted to test the market.
Absolutely. But do I want to go win four games with the Patriots and be treated like a cog and, you know, be a part of the face of this potential reboot of the Patriot way under Vrabel, who's a bit of a taskmaster, and I don't know their medical people and they don't know me as well, and versus this. And I do think he's obviously very comfortable. I mean, look, if they have to rotate tackles to help get through next year for a portion of the season, but he's playing in the playoffs and playing decent football in the playoffs,
you'll take it.
Yeah.
Quickly, before we step out, so Ronnie Stanley in, a couple of Ravens now out. Patrick McCary signs a three-year, $37.5 million deal with the Jaguars, over $20 million guaranteed to him. And Brandon Stevens, 3 years, $36 million with the Jets.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see the full breakdown of that Stevens contract and if they can get out of it after 1 year. I got to think they can, but we'll see. Those full numbers probably won't be until later tonight. Patrick McCary's been a hell of a Baltimore Raven. He was an exemplary discovery for them. They found ways to maximize value out of him at multiple positions, and good for him getting that kind of a payday. I mean, we always wondered, well, what would happen if he had to play 13, 14, 15 games? Well, he played them all. He played them at a position he hadn't played a ton of before. He played it at a high enough starting caliber level that, like, that's sort of what left guard has become for them, right? I mean, it's been going on Bredesen and Powers and
Bredesen just got paid to
Simpson.
And I get it. And now this we'll find out about the kid and whether he's ready or not. But good for Patrick McCary. Boy, oh boy, though, the Jags.
Yeah.
Does he have, because they're paying him like a starter. Like he's, he's, they expect him to be an every down guy for them. And boy, I just wonder after what he went through this year, if he's got back to back full seasons in him.
Coming up next, we'll talk Ronnie Stanley. We'll talk some Orioles and some Terps with our buddy Cordell Woodland. He joins us next here on The Fan.